6. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The L.A. Clippers have a big game tonight against the Golden State Warriors, tied at 2 games apiece in their series. But eclipsing that playoff will be a press conference scheduled for this afternoon, hosted by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, to address the racist comments alleged to have been said by Clippers owner Donald Sterling. The audio tape that has been at the center of this controversy appears to feature Sterling criticizing his girlfriend for bringing black people, including Magic Johnson, to Clippers games and for posing with African Americans on social media. It's been a few days after the release of the tape, and now all the headlines and news reports are asking the same question. What took the NBA so long to deal with Sterling with his history of housing discrimination and inflammatory statements? Advertisers are quickly distancing themselves from the team and its owner. We have two guests who are joining us in this hour of Radio Times. Kenneth Shropshire, a professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, faculty director of its Wharton Sports Business Initiative. And Ken, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome. And also with us is Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine. He's also sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. And Howard, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
I know a lot of people have heard these clips, but I do want to play a clip. And again, this is of alleged to be L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling arguing with his girlfriend, V. Stiviano. Let's listen.
Don't come to my games. Don't bring black people and don't come.
Do you know that you have a whole team that's black that plays for you?
Do I know? I support them and give them food and clothes and cars and houses. Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them? Do I know that I have? Who makes the game? Do I make the game or do they make the game? Is there 30 owners that created the league?
I'm not going to bring any black people to the stadium.
Well, is it easy to say that?
It's very easy for you to say that.
For you to say that?
I won't say that to anyone. I would never ask anyone not to bring someone based on race or color.
To you, Ken, is there anything Donald Sterling can do or say today to deal with these tapes purported to be him?
Well, he could say he's trying to launch a new bad Archie Bunker segment for the 21st century. I mean, I don't think there's much of anything short of the very weak attempt that's put out there to say we need to verify that this is actually him. I mean, if it is him, then this just piles on to his longer list of racist, sexist assaults that have taken place, you know, largely outside of sports. Now, right. Now he's dealing directly with the people that work for him.
Howard, his lawyer said, I think it was yesterday, that the recording is not consistent with his views, beliefs, or feelings. Do you think there's anything that Sterling could do or say today to address what appears to be these racist comments coming from him?
Well, I don't think he's trying to deny that it's him. I don't think that's even really part of it. I think it's him. I think he knows it's him. I don't think that's part of the deal at all. I think the end game right now is going to take place around 2:00 when we hear from the commissioner and find out if indeed a devastating blow is going to come to get him out of his franchise, to get him out of the NBA after 33 years. You have to remember, he is the longest tenured owner in the NBA now that Jerry Buss has passed away with the Lakers. So I feel like the real target here is there a way for the NBA to remove him with what they know right now, and how long is he going to fight this? And I think he's going to definitely fight this.
Well, Ken, let me go back to you and picking up on what Howard just said there. Does the NBA have the authority to remove the owner of one of their teams?
Well, that's what's very difficult to understand. You know, I haven't seen a copy of the league constitution and bylaws in years, so I'm not sure what's in there now. But as I understand it, historically, the reasons for removal have largely centered around financial reasons, that there's not the financial wherewithal to continue to run the franchise. You know, this has brought to light to a lot of folks that in the same way that morals clauses exist in athletes' contracts, there should be some form of a morals clause within the governance of the owners. So it's not something that the league can't do, but it would be a very difficult battle. Legally, they have the right, in essence, to choose their partners coming in. So there is a lot of legal groundwork that's been laid to say that you can get rid of partners as well. But, you know, the league is not exactly a partnership. It hasn't been done before, so it's going to be very difficult.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And, Professor, I mean, I think you're right. The other area where they can remove unilaterally is gambling. And
right.
Gambling is not, that doesn't apply here. The only area where I think that they've got some sort of grounds is if the corporate mobilization in terms of sponsorships becomes so great that it begins to affect his ability to run the team. Otherwise, Adam Silver, the new commissioner, is going to be using really broad powers that I don't think any owner in the NBA has ever used before. I mean, this reminds me very similarly of Al Davis with the Raiders in the NFL. Pete Rozelle wanted to get rid of him for years, but you couldn't remove him.
Mm. Couldn't do it.
Unlike antitrust with baseball, where you had Bud Selig and Major League Baseball essentially purchase the Los Angeles Dodgers, they did so as what Ken was talking about, that the Dodgers were having trouble paying their bills. There was financial, they had fiduciary responsibility there, so they took over the team, they bought the team, and then resold it. But there's no evidence right now that Donald Sterling is having any sort of financial difficulty. They're moving toward some really new territory, and I think Ken, you're right. What they have to do moving forward to satisfy the players as well, because if they choose to use their power, this is going to get even uglier, is they're going to have a better screening process. Sterling is grandfathered in. You can't remove him for being, for being a bad guy now. But moving forward, I think you're going to see a lot of conversation about the partnership between the NBA and the NBA players about who actually gets a franchise.
Well, and I do want to talk about the players, but Ken, let me go back to you. And my understanding is that Sterling bought the Clippers, 30-some years ago?
1981.
I think he paid $12 or $13 million. If it is essentially sold for him, wouldn't he reap a lot of profits for the sale of the Clippers and in a sense become an even wealthier man than he already is?
Well, and essentially that's what people kind of looking back at the McCourt situation have said as well. And I think Charles Barkley kind of humorously said the same thing, that, are we really going to punish a guy that bought a franchise for tens of millions and he's going to receive hundreds of millions? What kind of punishment is that? That's kind of a going away present. So in some sense, it gets rid of him. But ultimately, and I think that really brings to light what's most important here. I mean, Donald Sterling is this pretty bad guy, pretty bad reputation. You know, in the end, that's a problem that will take care of itself. It's one individual. I think what Silver has, the commissioner has a great chance to do, is to say, going forward, here's how we deal with these kinds of issues. This is the modern era. This is our role to deal with these race issues. And don't forget the sexism that's involved in this whole interaction as well. This is our opportunity to deal with this in a positive way going forward. We're doing what we can with Sterling. Sit tight. I mean, you can look to Marchot. You can look to the other people that have had these kinds of issues in the past, and you move past it. I mean, the Cincinnati Reds that Marchot owns, the most interesting day was when Dusty Baker, an African American, becomes a manager of that franchise that had such a negative history because of a racist owner.
Howard, let me go back to you. And do you think there's anything that the players can do? Do they have any clout when it comes to what to do with the guy that owns the team?
Yeah, and I think that you've heard the coach, Doc Rivers, express real reservations about his future with that team. And the players have enormous power. And let's remember something else here. The players are not simply the players of the Los Angeles Clippers. They're all the players. There are 16 teams right now active in the playoffs. And as you saw last night, actually 15 because Charlotte got eliminated. So you've got 15 teams still alive. Before last night's game between the Heat and the Bobcats, LeBron James organized a similar show of solidarity as in taking their warm-up jerseys and putting them in the middle of the court. If the players chose to work in unison as a group, as a union, which is actually what they are, and this is clearly at some point going to be a collective bargaining issue in terms of having a seat at the table. They could work together and not play. They could work together and have none of them play. And they could shut this thing down if they actually wanted to work together, if they chose to go there. If Adam Silver does not act decisively and give the players something that suggests that they're taking this Sterling thing seriously instead of just treating him as a member of the club and giving him a slap on the wrist, the players have incredible power. They could choose not to go out. And what would happen to them? The difference between players today and players yesterday, no matter what we talk about in terms of how socially responsible they are, they've got the financial power to absorb this. LeBron James does not need to play tonight or tomorrow's game. They've got the financial power, if they chose to use it, to force the NBA to deal with this. The question is whether or not they're going to. And I've heard from various sources that if Silver doesn't, then the players are actually considering a boycott. I don't know if it's all the teams, but certainly the Clippers.
Do you think that'd be an effective thing to do, Ken? The idea of a boycott, a strike, even a revolt, as some people have used?
You know, I'm mixed on it. I think it would be powerful and impactful. And you think of a history of great protest in sports. You know, Jesse Owens actually running, Tommy Smith and John Carlos actually getting on the victory stand. I mean, something about actually being out there, too. But I think it can be impactful either way. And so the decision that the players make, the more powerful decision, and I think Howard's absolutely right, would be to not play. That would be earth-shattering. I mean, that kind of move by athletes just hasn't happened in modern times.
But we do see, Ken, advertisers, I mean, they're kind of running for the hills in the last couple of days, advertisers supporting that have been supportive of the Clippers in the past.
Well, no, that's right. It's a great way to, you know, actually make a great statement and get a little bit more airtime as you go out and you save some money from whatever negative association there will be as this goes on. And then you always have the opportunity to come back once it gets cleared up. But there again, there's an agreement where there's some form of a morals clause that allows you to do that. So it's everywhere other than for the ownership of a franchise.
Well, and Ken, there's one other thing on this, too. Let's not forget that the Warriors coach, Mark Jackson, suggested the fans not come to tonight's game. And so this is what we're talking about when you're saying, okay, what can you do to get rid of Donald Sterling? You create this isolation. So now the players are isolating him by not playing or by doing some form of protest that stops the game. The fans aren't showing up because they're going to do their part. The sponsors aren't showing up because they're doing their part. And now you've got certain owners. We've already heard from Michael Jordan. We've heard from Alexander over in Houston. We've heard from Mark Cuban. You're hearing from these. You heard from even Dan Gilbert over in Cleveland. You heard from him today. All of these people. Now they're beginning to isolate. So now Donald Sterling is becoming a liability to the NBA. But all of those pieces have to sort of work in concert, and then there's no way out.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN.com. Ken Trupshire, faculty director of the Wharton Sports Business Initiative at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about what the country is talking about today, which is what to do about Donald Sterling. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Bristol Riverside Theater supports WHYY and presents Little Shop of Horrors May 6th through June 8th with its nerdy floral shop worker, the girl he loves, and a giant man-eating plant. Little Shop of Horrors is your typical boy-meets-girl, plant-eats-world love story. This popular cult classic is filled with such memorable hit songs as Somewhere That's Green, Skid Row, Downtown, Suddenly Seymour, Dentist, and the title song, to name a few. Tickets at brtstage.org or 215-785-0100.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. What makes economic sanctions work? We'll look at the effect they've had in North Korea and Iran and ask, are there lessons to be learned as the U.S. tries to use sanctions to get Russia to back off in Ukraine? That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Montgomery School supports WHYY. An independent school for pre-K through grade 8 students, Montgomery School believes in experiential education. Students can develop a passion for learning through freedom of choice and content while developing vital skills for success. An open house is May 6th at 7 p.m. It's an opportunity to see how Montgomery can help make a difference in your child's education. Details at montgomeryschool.org/admissions. Montgomery School. Inspired to explore. Prepared to succeed.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine, also sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, and Ken Shropshire, professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, faculty director of the Wharton Business, Wharton Sports Business Initiative. And we are talking about Donald Sterling and the taping that went public over the weekend purporting to be Donald Sterling making racist remarks about African Americans. We're talking about what to make of those remarks and what, if anything, should be done about it. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at whyyradiotimes. Ken, I think it's so weirdly fascinating that this comes on the heels of Cliven Bundy, the rancher that we all got to know last week, also in his 80s, talking about the Negro being happier as a slave than they are today. Are we just talking about this sort of an older generation of people that just don't get the world that we live in today?
Well, you know, we keep saying that, don't we?
We do.
We keep letting people get old, and then all of a sudden that's the excuse once they get old. So, and here's a very active man that's very successful in business. So the excuse is not there. I think what is intriguing is those who try to make the excuse be he was speaking privately with a friend and didn't anticipate that it would be recorded. I mean, you know, the problem there is here's a man with this long history, and then here's a moment where his private thoughts see the light of day. It's unfortunate for him it occurs in that way, but we're not trying to deliver some evidence in a court of law. We're trying to say this is who the man is.
Well, and just picking up on that, Howard, I don't, to be honest with you, I don't follow basketball very much, but I was reading about...
you hadn't been missing much until
anyway, that's for another show, but reading about Donald Sterling, I mean, charges of housing discrimination,
sexual harassment.
I mean, this is a long history, and it does raise questions about, you know, what the NBA was thinking by not in any way censuring or...
No, they weren't thinking. They weren't thinking. You're part of the club. The one thing about this tape that is fascinating to me, and we played it, you know, you played the clip when we first got started, was this notion of ownership. And they are part of a club. We talk about this with the players, about how the players have to realize that they make the game. And you heard Donald Sterling on the tape saying, who is the game? Are they the game or are we the game? He was essentially saying that he's the game, that the owners are the game, which runs counter to virtually everything that people feel about sports. Who goes to a game to see an owner play?
And nobody.
But I think that there is something very special, and I think Ken was right about this, is that the connective tissue happening today is very real. And when I listened to Doc Rivers yesterday talk about how he's really not sure what to do with his future, that's very different than he sounded earlier on Saturday when he was a basketball coach. He was focused on winning. He was talking about this as a distraction, as clutter, to get clutter out of the way of our team focusing to play a basketball game. By yesterday, he wasn't a basketball coach. He was an African-American living in this country. And you could hear the change in his voice, and you could hear the disappointment that here is what the man who signs his checks thinks of him in 2014. For everything that Doc Rivers had done, for everything all these players have done, for all the accomplishments, for everything that we think has been progress, here's what they think of you. And that is what is the connective tissue as to what's been going on in the past 10 days in terms of these public stories, whether it's Bundy or whether it's Sterling or even the Supreme Court on preferences up in Michigan, that there's this connective tissue taking place right now. And it's sort of all been this reminder of the disconnect that we have. And I think that when you have these stories, on the one hand, you can say, okay, well, why are we spending so much time with them? But on the other, when it becomes as personal as it has, and when you start to hear, what do they really think? I think that's when you start to see the players and the coaches begin to mobilize and say, well, maybe this is way more serious than we actually thought.
Ken, I thought President Obama actually had a very interesting comment about this, and perhaps he was even referring to Cliven Bundy. And this is a quote here. He says, when ignorant folks want to advertise their ignorance, you don't really have to do anything. You just let them talk. And, you know, we let people talk in this country. We have a First Amendment that, in a sense, protects people's opinions and the ability to express those opinions. Of course, then we have the right to criticize them. But I really like what the president had to say. I'm curious about your thoughts.
No, I think that's right. And that was, you know, in some of the initial interactions I had with the public on this issue, that's the first thing a lot of people asserted, that this was his First Amendment right. He can say whatever he wants to say. And you know, I think it's the league's right and duty to act when they hear what he has to say. So the idea of the free speech part of it, and the idea of you can display your ignorance anytime you want to, I am fully on board with that. I'll tell you the thing that, and listen to Howard, the thing that really strikes me about the players in all this is many of us have been critical about players not acting on political issues. That time and time again, there have been things that have come up and they haven't reacted. And ironically, we have this one moment where even Michael Jordan steps in, a person who has rarely interacted in this kind of way. But as Howard points out, this is really one of the first big public moments where there's something that directly impacts them, you know, a la Muhammad Ali getting drafted and then making that his cause. I mean, here's a moment where they finally understand that here's someone that is writing these texts for me and thinks less of me than anyone rightly should. And they see me as a commodity. So it's a very interesting moment for this generation. We talk about generational kinds of issues, to have this kind of wake-up call that many of us over the hill have been wondering, well, what's going on? Don't you understand this issue still exists? So for many of them, this was that wake-up moment that this issue still exists, and certainly not in everyone, but there are people where it exists.
Sure, and on top of that, Ken, you also have the players realizing something else, which is this notion of property. That in a billion-dollar industry, they would like to have thought of themselves as part. You really couldn't do that. And I think what's also really kind of interesting about it is that for one of the first times, you've got this is the reason why you can't dismiss these old guys who are out of time, because they're still very present. As you said before, Donald Sterling bought that team for $12.7 million in 1981. The team is worth $700 million right now. Wow. It's not like he's sitting on his front porch and we have to go find him to go find his views. He's present. He's powerful. He's right in front of us, as is Bundy.
Well, and just going, this is a 2009 quote from Elgin Baylor, who was Clippers general manager and had a wrongful termination lawsuit against Sterling. He didn't win, but he talked about the quote-unquote plantation mentality, and that's about 5 years ago. So again, I guess, Ken, what we see here and why we're talking about it is this kind of consistent stories coming out about Donald Sterling.
No, and I'm always very careful about using that analogy. I mean, there's nothing more hateful and painful in our history than slavery. So I'm always careful about going to that extreme. But it does provide the appropriate optic to think about what a great man like Elgin Baylor endured. I mean, granted, it's in the context of a lawsuit, but there's a lot of other language he could have chosen to use as a descriptor of what was going on in this place of employment. And it's also, I mean, the interesting thing, too, I mean, Doc Rivers comes back after he's been a player there. Elgin stays there, I think, for, you know, 23 years or whatever it is. It's also just a mind-boggler to think about the level of tolerance that people have that want to be in sport, that they will say, okay, this is the organization that I will tolerate working with. So it is just a real eye-opener for people to, you know, and think about it. What middle-aged man or in many cases woman wouldn't jump at the opportunity to be involved in sports and get paid millions of dollars
for
running
a
team or playing.
Yeah, go ahead, Howard.
It's a closed business. I mean, that's the problem. And it's also the joy of it. These guys, this is all they know. Elgin Baylor had been associated with the NBA for 50 years. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player, and now he was an executive with the Clippers. Doc Rivers has been playing basketball since he was 5 years old. They don't know anything else. And unlike, I agree with you, I don't. Whenever you hear the slavery analogy, you have to pull back. And you have to pull back from using it. You have to pull back when you hear it. But at the same time, part of me is thinking, well, you know, Elgin Baylor could have quit. Elgin Baylor is a Hall of Fame player. He could have gone somewhere else. He had other options, except for the fact that this is also a closed business, as we always say in sports when it comes to coaching. Well, there's only 30 of these. There's only 30 of these jobs. And unlike working at Penn and saying, well, you know, it's a hostile work environment at Penn, so I'm going to go to Harvard, or I'm going to go to Princeton, or I'm going to go to UCLA, these owners are all together in this. And it's not as though you can necessarily get away from the industry, because the reputation follows you, because there's only 30 of these jobs. And believe me, when you are outside of the business, it's incredibly difficult to get back in. So a lot of players and a lot of executives, they put up with far more than they should because of the allure of being part of this thing that people love so much.
And that's Howard Bryant, a senior writer for ESPN. Also with us, Ken Shropshire from the University of Pennsylvania, from the Wharton School at Penn. And we are talking about, frankly, what just about everybody has been talking about in the last couple of days. And that's the audio recording of what is alleged to be the voice of L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling making racial slurs and what to make of it. There is a game tonight, the L.A. Clippers playing the Warriors. And also there's a press conference scheduled for this afternoon to address, we think, some of the issues that we have been talking about. And we want to hear from you. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Rodney called us up pretty quickly. Rodney calling us from North Philadelphia. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Good to talk to you. I'm a regular listener to your program.
I know you are. Go ahead.
Let me begin by saying that I am an African-American male who is highly offended by what Donald Sterling said. But early this morning, I heard something that kind of gave me pause. And if it's true, then, you know, I think this complicates, at least in my mind, Donald Sterling. I heard that on the one hand, he gives the local NAACP chapter, where he has given them millions of dollars in donations, and that the LA NAACP has already given him an award, and they were about to give him another award, and they said, oh, after this, we're not going to give him this award, which, you know, that sounds like a separate program in and of itself to discuss, you know, the relationship between the NAACP and Donald Sterling.
Sure.
But, you know, on the one hand, you know, Donald Sterling thinks a certain way about my people, but then on the other hand, he supports an organization whose goal is to uplift, you know, African Americans. So, I don't know how much your guest can comment on that.
Sure. But, well, Rodney, you know, I appreciate.
I'm kind of confused right now.
So. Well, I appreciate, and I read the exact same thing. And Howard, if I can toss that to you.
Sure. Well, I think that, and it wasn't just one award; it was three. He received two Lifetime Achievement Awards and was about to receive a third until this scandal occurred. And this is the question. This is the question that the Jackie Robinson Foundation, my very good friend Della Britton Baez, has with the you know, with Tom Yawkey. Everyone knows the Red Sox reputation, but the Yawkey Foundation gives lots of money to the Jackie Robinson Foundation. Donald Sterling gives a lot of money to the NAACP, and the question has always been, okay, do you take the Robin Hood approach that you're going to take money from the bad guy and make good with it, do good things with it, do good with bad money? Or do you say, you know what, I don't want your money? Nobody or very few places are in a position, especially nonprofit, are in a position today where they can say no to major, massive donations. It's a huge question. I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, when you're in a situation where you're trying to do the good work, You've got to take the money where you can get it. But at the same time, there's a price for that. And the price for that is huge embarrassment right now on the part of the NAACP. They're wondering, people are wondering, how could you honor this guy with what we know?
Well, and Ken, I'd be curious about your response as well. And does everything seem to go back to money?
Well, it's incredible, and it happens so often. And, you know, I'm from L.A. and was aware of these awards. You know, you talk about things that need to be reevaluated, and Howard laid it out pretty well. It is the whole process. And it's not just the NAACP. It's not just the Jackie Robinson Foundation. It's what all these organizations do. And it's, you know, if you run into a problem, one of the things on the top of the PR list is to figure out what organization you can associate yourself with in some way to clean up your reputation. I mean, it goes back, even the great Sugar Ray Robinson had that kind of situation with a reporter, and he wanted the reporter to write positive things about him, so he contributes money from about to his foundation. Mm. So this is an old story, and it's not something that we should get hypnotized by and say, well, maybe he is a good man. No, he's a smart man. He's a shrewd man. He's doing what people do in this kind of situation. I have a problem with black people. I'll give some money to the NAACP. I mean, it's not mysterious about why he took those steps.
And Howard, you mentioned this earlier about the fact that these are prize positions, that, you know, there are 30 teams in the country. What do you think, and we are hearing from some of the other owners, but do you think it makes sense for them if the players organize against Sterling? Is there something that the other owners can do to organize in a protest against him?
Well, and this is the question. Do you even want to protest? I think Mark Cuban's comments about the slippery slope occurring when you try to remove one of your own for his views, because essentially that means, well, if they can remove Donald Sterling for what he thinks, they can one day remove me. So nobody wants to create that kind of precedent. The question is always going to be, when you're in the club, how much do you protect the other members? And I think it's always important to remember, and I'm trying to do this myself in my thinking and in my comments, let's not focus so much on the players. This is actually an Adam Silver as commissioner and 29 other owner issue primarily. This is their problem. And everyone else is going to react based on how they handle their problem. And so to see the other owners come out, and you have to remember one other thing, which is very important. It is that because he's the longest tenured owner, nobody is in ownership today who voted him in. So this is a new generation of owners. It's a new commissioner. Nobody necessarily has that much allegiance to Donald Sterling, the person. So I think it's easier for them to mobilize around him as opposed to a generation of owners who all bought teams around the same time. At the same time, that is the big question. Do you create precedent that one day could get you?
And that's Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN, Ken Shropshire, faculty director of the Wharton Sports Business Initiative at the University of Pennsylvania. Rodney, thanks for the phone call. We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation and to our callers. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Well, would you like NBA Commissioner Adam Silver to say or do this afternoon? A press conference has been called to address some of the alleged comments made by Clippers owner Donald Sterling about African Americans, and Ken Shropshire, our guest as well. And we're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. We want to hear from you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
Next time on The Takeaway, we're talking about the Fourth Amendment. It's all about search and seizure. And smartphones?
Checking my sources. I'm always learning new things.
The Supreme Court hears arguments on whether law enforcement officers can search the phones of a person arrested. We look at how the law changes with the technology of the times, plus all the day's news and your comments. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Penn Museum supports WHYY. Penn Museum welcomes world-renowned Egyptologist Dr. Zahi Hawass for a public lecture on Saturday, May 3rd at 2 p.m. A tireless advocate for archaeological exploration and conservation of Egypt's ancient monuments, Dr. Hawass will share an inside perspective on a host of recent archaeological and scientific discoveries in Egypt. A book signing will follow the lecture. Details are at www.penn.museum.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let's get right back to the phones. They have exploded. We have Tim from Primus joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm curious as to what's going to happen tonight during the game, but about the game two nights ago, I can't really understand why the players, their form of protest was just to turn their shirts inside out. I mean, for a team and a bunch of players who are financially secure for the most part, it seems like such a meaningless gesture to practice with your shirt turned inside out.
Well, Tim, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Ken a chance to respond to that. What do you think, Ken?
Well, that's a very good question, because I think the players are in this moment, as Howard described, where it's in many ways it's not their problem. And for the Clippers, it's even more difficult. Are we going to do this alone? You know, in their minds, to do what they did was something that was pretty dramatic. I mean, you think about the last time you saw any form of a full team protest take place. That was very unique. So to move that rapidly and do something, yeah, I applaud them for taking that step. I think that the bigger movements, the kinds of things that Howard was talking about, I mean, that kind of thing takes time to pull together. And the unfortunate piece right now for the players is they do not have an executive director of their union. So they don't really have a business person that's leading them, or a political person that's thinking through these kinds of issues. So Chris Paul, the president of the union, is on the floor himself and help to orchestrate this. But you know, to think about the kinds of options that are there and think about the precedent that's in place, the actual participation in some way, sometimes, as I said, can be more impactful than stepping away altogether.
Howard, let me tell something to you. We've had a lot of comments on our social media and questions about, you know, who recorded this tape, how did it get out onto TMZ, which is, you know, basically a gossip website, and questions about, I guess, privacy. We touched on this earlier, but is that important to get to the bottom of that?
Well, I think it's always important. I think all the process is important. I think it's somewhat secondary now, although in the legal proceeding it won't be, because I believe California is one of those states where you cannot record somebody without their knowledge on the telephone. They have to know they're being recorded, otherwise it's illegal. So we'll see how that plays out. But obviously the information itself is what people are focusing on. I thought it was weaker. I thought they should have done more. I thought that when you're really thinking about impact, you have to decide what is important to you, what is important in terms of sacrifice. And sacrifice is what Ken was talking about earlier. When you talk about Jesse Owens, or you talk about Ali or John Carlos and Tommy Smith, back in the day, these guys didn't even have the financial resources to make a stand, yet they did. And I think that the real question for them is there an issue out there that is important enough for us to look in the mirror and decide that it's bigger than us and that we have to give something away? And the thing that struck me about all of this is that the players don't have an executive director, yet they are a collective bargaining unit. So at some point, I felt, if they had made a stand right now, or if they make a stand tonight, if they don't get the information, if Adam Silver doesn't say what they want to hear, that it's going to strengthen their bargaining position, because the owners know not to mess with them. Right now, it's an incredibly tenuous position that the players are in, because they're still in a negotiating mode with the owners. And if they show that they're willing to stick together, it will pay benefits later on. But if you pay attention to what we've been hearing, LeBron James, for as strong as his statement was about how there's no place in the game for Donald Sterling, he still said, we'll let the commissioner handle it.
Hmm. Let me get Reverend Tim Merrill to join us from Camden, New Jersey. And nice to have you back on the show. It's been a little while. Go ahead, Tim.
Greetings, Marty, and to your guests. Hey, I'm worried about this dialogue because historically, and these NBA players are entertainers, and historically, African-American entertainers have acquiesced to racist systems for the benefit of money and fame or what have you. Go back to Hattie McDaniel, Butterfly McQueen, Stephen Fetchit, playing in the racist Hollywood system for fame and money or what have you. Think about the current day, Michael Jordan, who cooperates with white industry to put overpriced sneakers into the community, and no one says anything about it. When Mr. Sterling has violated housing codes with racism, the NAACP gives him an award. And I think this is a case where the African-American community needs to do a gut check, because we just got caught with our pants down because we have cooperated with these systems of racism. And our black consciousness has evolved into reacting to these micro or macro aggressions, but not the systematic things that go on every day. Think about hip-hop and a racist structure where white men and black entertainers have brought some of the most diabolical messages in our communities, messages that encourage black-on-black crime, drug abuse, all kinds of misogynistic messages that come through, and we have not been aggressive in addressing these things. And I think these are some chickens coming home to roost in our community, and we need to start responding at more of a systematic language level, else the language becomes important. You could be as racist as you want, but don't get caught on the telephone espousing your racist points of view. And I'm afraid that's where it's going. We're driving it, the language underground, but the actions are still overt and seen in our communities every day.
Well, Tim, I appreciate the call on Radio Times. And as usual, you put a lot of interesting things on the table for us to discuss. But let me just toss this to you, Ken, and just to underscore what he's saying. If we're talking about the NBA, my understanding, about 80% of the players are black. And obviously, the majority of the owners are white. I mean, do you see a kind of step in Fetch it analog in this story?
Well, sports is a great lullaby for the whole race issue in the sense of, you know, I always say it used to be the closer you got to the ball, the less likely you were to see a person of color, a person that was near in the thinking positions, the quarterback or the point guard, that sort of thing. And we weren't even on the field. Now we are dominant on the field of play. So now it is, the closer you get to the money, the less likely you are to see a person of color. You're recognizing that it is the owners that actually write these big checks to these players. So the lullaby is that we see in sport looks like things are so much better. It doesn't look like, you know, 1946 before Jackie Robinson. It looks like things are so much better. But they're not. And this is, you know, this Sterling moment is a nice little wake up. You know, disturbing the lullaby, where people are stepping back and saying, you know, this thing is not as sweet as we thought it was. There's something going on here that maybe we didn't pay attention to. So, you know, out of the bad comes the good. I hope this is a moment where people step back and realize, you know, this thing is still problematic. We have made, like we have in the rest of society, great progress, but at the points where it's really important, they're still, the gates are still shut. You know, when Sterling bought this franchise, there were African Americans in line ready to pay $10, $12 million for a franchise, and it was still very difficult to do so. I mean, the way things have changed now, if you have your $1 billion, it's not as difficult to get in there now, but the economics, the structure, where we are in this country, there just aren't that many people of color that are in position to say, I have the disposable income to make that kind of purchase.
Yeah, that's why they want Magic Johnson to buy everything.
Right, exactly.
Go ahead, Howard. What did you just say? Go ahead.
I think the Reverend had it right. The question now comes to this. What do you stand for? Who are you? And these comments, these moments, because they're so rare, and Ken is right, this moment is a very special one, and I don't think that anybody recognized what it meant. I was on the train coming home from D.C. on Saturday when I kept getting these text messages about Sterling. I was like, okay, what happened next? Now you see what happened. And I think the real question is that this dynamic has been in place for a long time, and the cover for everything has always been money. Money has been the healing balm for all of these conversations. Well, you can put all kinds of hip-hop messages into the community. Well, but the artists are making money. Well, you know, you can talk about the racial dynamics in sports, that the NBA is 76.8% black. That's great. But look at all the money the players are making. Now we've got an issue right now where money cannot be the balm. In fact, money in some ways creates the culpability. And so now if you take away the money, and you take away the culpability, and now you have to just look at the issue for what it is. Now these players and the community itself, everyone has to look and say, okay, what do I actually stand for? And that's why earlier in the conversation when we were talking about what needs to take place, everybody's got their piece of it. Do the fans show outrage and still pay to go to the games or watch the games on TV? Because Donald Sterling is getting a cut out of all of it because of revenue sharing. Do the players, you know, does everybody, do they have outrage and do nothing, or do they have outrage and put something behind it?
Let me get another caller in. Tim, thanks for the call. We've got Leonard now from West Philadelphia. Hi, Leonard. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a lifelong Democrat, but in this case, I seem to think that the best possible solution or the best possible punishment for him is just to let the market take its course. Let him to continue to be the owner as long as he feels that he wants to be, while his brand is perhaps irreparably damaged by this scandal, and then he'll actually suffer a financial loss. If he's forced to sell right now, he'll make a lot of money. If he's forced to sell in perhaps a year after his brand is almost destroyed, he could lose $200 million.
What do you think of that, Ken?
Well, that's where I was earlier, at least in terms of thinking about what would in reality happen, that there would be this great financial windfall. You know, I'm all for redemption, and I'm all for a period of time to let somebody change their stripes and that sort of thing. But it's just not happening in the circumstance. So I think the reality is that if there was a way to cut him out, to pay him and be done with it, make a bold statement that this is not allowed in sport, this is not what we should have in society. I mean, that would be the most powerful move that could be made, and let him have the money and continue to enjoy the rest of his life.
Let me get another caller on related to what Leonard was just saying. This is Mike from Germantown. And Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, thank you also for taking my call.
Sure.
But I just hope that everybody remembers that the First Amendment covers even stupid people making stupid remarks. I love the Reverend's remarks about the, why not get the hip-hop people? If any of your commentators now are people of color, are they going to apologize for having once in their life used the N-word? It just seems like this guy's being punished for political correctness. He's already paid a really big price. And I hope that the commissioner doesn't follow the NCAA's bad example with what they did with Penn State by sticking their nose where it doesn't belong.
Well, Mike, let me ask you, what's the big price that Donald Sterling has paid?
Well, when his sponsors start backing out, costing him a lot of money, he's already paid greatly. And don't forget that this whole thing stems around a romantic attachment with this woman who he felt was embarrassing her by bringing some guys to the game. Now, had those guys been Hispanic or white guys and they were dressed like more crazy people, he would have probably had something else to say about him. But this guy was thinking with his penis and not with his brain.
Well, Howard,
really what this is all about.
Do you think it's that simple, Howard?
Well, I think the caller is absolutely right in one regard, that this entire thing started because this 80-year-old man is having a sexual relationship with a 20-year-old, and he's essentially saying, don't embarrass me. I mean, that's really the core of this. However, I disagree with the caller in that he's paid any price. Donald Sterling doesn't care about this. Donald Sterling is 80 years old. He's worth $1 billion, and he's going to play this out. And the problem is, it's not as though this is simply First Amendment, because let's not forget, First Amendment is does not protect you in the workplace. He's in the workplace talking about his employees. So it's not as though he's the guy who just has these opinions. There's an umbrella of franchises. The NBA is essentially a closed business, and everyone is being affected by this. And yeah, does it make sense to one day just let him, to just let him drown and to see if any players want to play for him or whatever? Yeah, you could do that. But I think Ken is right. I think that you've got to send the message that this isn't how we do business in 2014. And I think that's the message that they're going to send.
Ken, about a minute before we have to say goodbye here, what kind of pressure then on Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, for what appears to be a press conference scheduled for this afternoon?
Well, Adam is a very good man, and this is a very difficult situation. And it's tremendous pressure. I'm not sure what kind of pressure is coming from the owners in terms of their concerns, like the ones expressed by Cuban. But I think he's going to do the right thing. This is his premier moment. This is his premier public action. So
he's
I'm
only
anticipating,
had the job 85 days.
Well, yeah, yeah. So I'm anticipating he will step up and do as close as he can to the right thing.
And what would that be, the right thing?
Well, if not to move as aggressively as possible to end the ownership relationship, it's to essentially banish Sterling from basketball completely.
Do you agree with that, Howard? Would that send the right message?
Yeah, I think you've got to satisfy your players, because I honestly think that from everything that I've been thinking and hearing for the past 24 hours, if Silver does not act decisively, you might not have a game tonight. I mean, this could go nuclear if they don't satisfy the players.
Well, my thanks to both of you. We called you up yesterday. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Howard Bryant, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And he's senior writer for ESPN.com, ESPN the magazine, also sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Ken Shropshire, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. A professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's also faculty director of its Wharton Sports Business Initiative. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our homepage about what we have been talking about. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and of course, download a podcast of the show. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.